Thanks for joining Impact Boom. On this episode,
we now adopt a social model of disability or inclusion, which is that it's the community's responsibility to be inclusive and cater to a range of different needs. It's not that person's responsibility, it's our responsibility. And so we need to learn to be educated and adapted so that the world is fit for purpose for everybody.
Welcome to impactboom.org. We search the globe to find the people, stories, ideas, and inspiration to help you create maximum positive impact. Each week, Impact Boom brings you thought-provoking interviews with world-leading practitioners passionate about creating positive social change. These designers, social entrepreneurs, educators, innovators, thinkers, and doers share their projects, initiatives, thoughts, and insights on creating a better world. You can find all the stories, links, and other great content at impactboom.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter for the latest updates, or subscribe to the newsletter or on iTunes.
Thanks for listening to episode 474 of Impact Boom. My name's Indio Miles, and I'm passionate about communicating the initiatives and enterprises causing sustainable and positive change globally. Today, we're speaking with Erica Gleason. Erica is a senior behavior specialist, the CEO and founder of Autism Swim, a director on multiple boards, author, speaker, and inclusion advocate. She has worked in the disability sector for 16 years with a passion for inclusion and education. She is also a 2021 finalist for Australian of the Year due to the impact she has had in the sector. On today's podcast, we'll be discussing improving the quality of life for people with diverse abilities through consciously designing and advocating for a more inclusive and understanding society. Erica, it's amazing to have you on the podcast. A long time coming, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Excellent. So to start off, Erica, could you just share a bit about your background and really what led to your work in the inclusion and social impact space?
Sure. So I grew up in a small, somewhat small town called Port Macquarie and went to university in Sydney and studied behavioural science and then went on to do a postgraduate in autism studies. And I didn't really have a clear understanding of where that was going to take me. I was just fascinated by the human brain and the ways in which the brains differ from one person to another, learning styles, trauma, all that sort of stuff. Straight out of uni, I got a job working in the disability sector. So somebody just took a chance on me. As I said, it wasn't really intentional from my point of view to go into that sector. But I remember on the first day of work coming home and saying, this is the area of work that I will be in for the rest of my career. I just knew it was where I was meant to be. So for a long time, I was a senior behavior specialist, which means I work, and I still do work, with people who have very complex behavior challenges. And that involved me flying around Australia a lot. And as part of that arrangement, I stumbled across the drowning statistics for those on the autism spectrum. And that's that those individuals are 160 times more likely to drown than their peers. And as a result, Autism Swim was born. So whilst I'm very embedded in the sector and I'm very proud of a lot of the things that have happened, I must say the vast majority of them have been accidental. And I've just been lucky enough to find something that I'm incredibly passionate about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite an amazing journey. And I mean, you've worn a lot of different hats. It's clear to see there. And as you said, leading up to eventually becoming the founder and CEO of Autism Swim. And you touched on a bit of its purpose there, but can you share a bit more about the organization's activities? And also you talked about that statistic there as well, the problem that this organization exists to address. Can you share more about that?
Sure. So that frightful statistic is, I guess, the catalyst for Autism Swim existing. When I stumbled across that, I became quite desperate for the clients that I was working with to engage in aquatic services, whatever that looked like for them, but struggled to find any services that would take them on due to their needs. So it meant that I was working with people who were in the highest possible risk category for drowning, yet weren't able to find a single swimming lesson service for them to learn how to swim because they couldn't swim a stroke. And that to me was just absolutely outrageous. And so I started providing pro bono training and support to swimming teachers just in the hope that they would be able to take my clients on. And at this stage, I had no intent of starting a business. In fact, probably the last thing on my agenda at that point in time. But I didn't realize how big the problem space was. And it quickly became apparent that it was a national issue, that aquatics was not inclusive. And then it very quickly became apparent it was an international issue. So it wasn't scalable or sustainable for me to continue to provide these services pro bono all over Australia. So I set up an online, like a learning management system with an online certification where aquatic providers, so be it allied health professionals, swimming teachers, surfing teachers, whoever it is that works in the aquatic space, can go online and become autism swim approved through an ongoing certification process. And that has resulted in currently there being autism swim approved providers in 29 countries around the world. So just goes to show the impact of technology and setting things up online to be scalable. Again, most of that accidental. So that's sort of our main bread and butter. But you and I can both swim, but that doesn't mean we're not going to drown. So in order to really combat that statistic, we had to delve quite deep into why is it that this population group is at such significant risk of drowning, and then develop a business solution to each of the associated problem spaces. So in addition to the certification, we also run a modified nippers program called Nippers across a range of different beaches in Australia. We have wandering and drowning prevention support to parents, and we have a free water safety app, which is designed to teach children with a disability how to be safe in and around the water. And if we can do each of those initiatives well, then we know we will have a significant impact on those drowning statistics and ultimately make aquatics inclusive, which is the mission of the organization.
Wow. I mean, you're just absolutely covering, you said the problem space, and you're really tackling each individual part of the problem space right at the source. And it's really interesting. And I think that goes part into my next question as well, is looking at your background and how that impacts your approach to entrepreneurship. So we talked about it in the bio that your background is as a senior behavior specialist, right? So are there any key learnings or techniques that you can share with our audience that come from your background as a senior behavior specialist? And how does this experience impact your approach to entrepreneurship?
Very great question. A lot of people don't even know what a senior behavior specialist is or what our role that we even exist. Effectively, what the role of a behavior specialist is involves fundamentally understanding why someone is engaging in a particular behavior, of which a lot of the time they're quite complex and quite severe. And only when you've developed an understanding of the why can you go ahead and develop protocols, programs, solutions to ameliorate the behavior. So, if I was to reflect on any sort of synergy between the roles, there's in fact quite a lot. Not that I've done much reflection on it, but it is a very interesting question. When it comes to entrepreneurship, I still think the process is the same. You have to understand the problem space, you have to understand your why well before you can go ahead and develop the solutions. Otherwise, everything's just like a band-aid approach. So I think the process is probably the same. The process might be the same, but both of them involve a lot of trial and error. So you can go into entrepreneurship with the absolute grandest business plan that ever landed, and it could go out the window on day one. Just from you trying to operationalize it and realizing it's not quite right, or this is the feedback from your customers, or whatever it might be. So you go in with one particular train of mind, but you have to remain very flexible. And the thing with being a behavior specialist as well is that we have to think very quickly, we have to adapt. And a lot of the time, that's amidst chaos and things going wrong around us. And you're the one that has to bring the calm. And I think that's the way it feels sometimes in startup world, is every day is just chaos. And you sort of at the end of the day reflect on what you did and you're like, don't really know what I did, but I did 50,000 things today and I put out fires and I solved this problem and I launched this part of the organization. And it's just chaos, to be honest. And you have to learn to work well and calmly amidst that. And I think you have to be, I'm a naturally quite a pragmatic person, but would like to think that other people's welfare always comes first. So we could be tackling every possible solution under the sun, but if the team's welfare is not at the top and people aren't feeling safe and happy at work, then it's all for what? I mean, to me, how the team feels is probably number one for me, which stems back to being a behavior specialist and always having your clients' welfare put first. And I guess the other thing probably that I can think of is that because of my background, I'm far less risk averse than the average person. I walk into scenarios where the risk profile is incredibly high and things could go wrong, and I have to be on guard and be ready to respond quite quickly. And I think that also lends itself to entrepreneurship because if you wrap yourself up in a bubble of being risk averse, then you're not going to get very far. So it's about being considered with risk. Obviously, we need to think things through when we use risk matrices and all those trendy little tools that we've got. But ultimately, there is significant risk associated with being an entrepreneurship, sorry, with being an entrepreneur. So I guess that also has lended itself to my background.
100%. And I mean, just having that ability to identify a problem and then reiterate those solutions, that's super applicable to that entrepreneurship space. And you've clearly had a lot of experience with that in across all of your professional experience. So thank you so much for sharing a bit more about that with our audience there. And I'm just wanting to change maybe the focus a bit of our conversation now. And if we're looking at the disadvantaged or diverse community more broadly, right? What does enhancing their quality of life look like in practice? And does this require focusing on systems change as the approach? So I'm just wondering from your experience, can you speak a bit to what is required to enhance the quality of life for these people?
Another good question, because quality of life is such a buzz term, as is inclusion and accessibility. And fundamentally, people need to understand what it actually means to be inclusive and what it means to increase somebody's quality of life. In terms of my personal opinion on it, I think that fundamentally it involves listening to those with lived experiences and learning from the past mistakes of the sector, of which there are a plethora of. The disability sector in particular is about 40 years behind. So constantly be learning and evolving and listening to those who have lived experience rather than speaking. And obviously, in my clinical work, I work a lot with individuals who are non-speaking and they aren't able to speak for themselves. So we can use a range of assessment tools to ascertain whether the person's life is where it's sitting across a range of different quality of life domains.
Like
But
communicated, yeah.
effectively, it's about offering support to set someone's life up to be as ordinary as their peers. So, just by virtue of the fact this person has a disability or has specific needs, doesn't mean their life should look any different to somebody else their age. And unfortunately, whilst that notion sounds great, it's easier said than done when you live in a world that is only built for neurotypicals. So, I guess we've flip the switch. Once upon a time, we looked at disability in particular through a medical lens, which is that this person has a particular deficit and it is their problem to learn how to live with it in this world. We now adopt a social model of disability or inclusion, which is that it's the community's responsibility to be inclusive and cater to a range of different needs. It's not that person's responsibility, it's our responsibility. And so we need to learn to be educated and adapted so that the world is fit for purpose for everybody.
Yeah, just some really crucial observations and points there for anyone who is looking to work in this space. And as you said, it's very ridden with buzzwords and all of these different terms being thrown around at the moment. But just some really powerful advice there for anyone who wants to work in this space. And speaking of which, if there was any advice that you would give to an entrepreneur who wants to make their business or organization more inclusive, what would that advice be?
Look, everybody you speak to might have a different opinion on this. And again, I think chatting with people who have lived experience is a non-negotiable when it comes to making a business more accessible or inclusive. But I don't think it's like a trickle-down effect or a slow burn or something you're sort of chipping away at. To me, it's a considered and conscious decision to update operations and policies which pertain to inclusion and accessibility. And there's obviously a very strong business case for it, with 1 in 5 people now having a disability. So similarly to quality of life, we actually need people to educate themselves on what inclusivity means. And it's not about ticking a box to say you have a ramp, which is what most people think it means. If they've got a ramp out the front of their premise, they think that they're absolutely killing it on the inclusive front. It's about listening to those with lived experience about what they need in order to feel welcomed, safe, and happy at your business, and then adopting these things as the norm. Inclusion needs to become a core value of the organization with the culture shift and the leadership accountability that comes with it.
Yeah, and it's a very long-term process, right?
Well, it's forever evolving. So it'll be, as I said, not something that you can tick off and say we're now inclusive. It's about being on an ongoing pursuit of understanding inclusion and what are the things that we need to operationalize this year, and what are people with lived experience telling us, and what are the terms that have changed? Like, it's constantly evolving and changing. And so there is a responsibility to keep abreast of that and make sure that the business practices reflect the changing nature of the industry.
Yeah. And that approach really ties back into all of your experience as a senior behavior specialist, right? Being able to identify the new challenges or identify the new feedback that you're getting, and then being able to create that new space and solutions. So once again, thank you so much for sharing that advice there with our audience, Erica. And we're actually moving in now to the end of our interview. I've just got two more questions to ask you. Sure. So firstly, are there any inspiring projects or initiatives that you would like to share with our audience that are creating some social impact or change?
Look, I'm lucky enough to be surrounded by so many incredible people doing amazing things, so can't help but use this opportunity to shout out to a couple of my friends or associates that I'm just super proud of, that are in a completely different industry to me, but are doing such significant work. And I could obviously be here all day, but I could just go through a couple of them. So I have a good friend of mine named Joel, who is the CEO and founder of an organization called Waves of Wellness, which is all about surf therapy. So they run a range of different initiatives, but it's basically about combining surfing and mental health together.
Yeah.
They do Fluoro Fridays, and he does a lot of corporate mental health stuff as well. But I'm all about amalgamating things, obviously, with Autism Swim. It's like inclusion and the water together. To me, it's just a bit of a no-brainer. So he's done that with the ocean and mental health, which is really cool. There is another organization called the Pink Elephants, another friend of mine named Sam, who started this organization around miscarriage support. So they become Australia's, they perhaps are international now as well, like the go-to organization for anything to do with needing support around early miscarriage. So they're doing really important work. And only last night, actually, one of my clients who I used to work with, his mum sent me a clip about an organization called Mates. So this particular client is now a model, and this modeling agency is specific to those on the autism spectrum. So I think they're aligning themselves with some inclusive clothing brands and just doing really cool things in the space. So I guess they're three that I would be watching.
Great recommendations for our audience to check out there, Erica. And to finish off, are there any books or resources that you would recommend for our listeners to have a look at also?
Look, I have been a bit of a junkie for professional development and personal development over the years and have listened to many podcasts and read many books about it, and then got to the point where I was sort of obsessing about productivity and felt that it wasn't really serving me anymore and probably just needed to take a little break and just immerse my brain into some other things that weren't necessarily related to work. So I don't have any work-based ones that I can recommend of late. I can talk about some personal preferences that aren't related to that. So some fiction, for instance. So some of the podcasts I'm listening to, a really great one called The Imperfects, which is very much about vulnerability, and they get guests on there who are quite famous a lot of the time and seemingly from the outside have their life together and have it all. And then they get on there and talk about their vulnerabilities and all the things that they are challenged with. And they have a resident psychologist on there. And I just think it's a really nice podcast to listen to in terms of perhaps making us all a little bit more vulnerable, but just realizing the grass isn't always greener. I also love a bit of true crime. And I listen to a lot of clinical podcasts pertaining to my clinical work as a behavior specialist. And in terms of books, again, I've just been on a bit of a fiction bandwagon lately. Probably my two favorite authors of late are is Jeanine Cummins and Craig Silvey, both of whom I've read all of their books and thought they were all as extraordinary as the other ones. So hopefully there's something there that somebody might be able to take away.
I think that there are a lot of people who are in this space who have been both on the addicted to the personal development productivity side and then also who are trying to make the move away from it. So I think that these recommendations are definitely going to be helpful for someone, Erica, and I'm certainly excited to check out some of these authors and podcasts as well. So for our listeners, all of those podcasts, books, organizations, all of your work and Autism Swims, they'll all be linked in at the end of the article. So once people have had a listen to our conversation, or maybe they've read through the transcript, they can jump on the website and check all of those out and have a look for themselves. So that does, unfortunately, Erica, bring us to the end of our interview for today. And I just want to say on behalf of Impact Boom, thank you so much for basically just making the time to share all of these lessons and all of this key advice from your depth of experience in the space. And we're really looking forward to following more of your work in the future and loved having this conversation. So thank you so much once again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure and we really appreciate your support.
Thanks for listening to Impact Boom. You'll find links to the initiatives, people and resources mentioned in this podcast on impactboom.org. Please leave your comments below and remember, we'll be publishing fresh inspiration and insights to help you create positive impact every week on the website, Facebook page and Twitter. We'll be right back.